just anybody.
Help!
You know I need someone.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to what I promise will be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Glad you joined us tonight. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio. And across the way, George Fraser, a man who looks expensive without paying expensive. How are you, George?
Hey, thank you. That was very nice.
Well, yeah, you don't pay full retail for that stuff, do you?
No.
I didn't think so. George, we're going to have an interesting show tonight. I have to say, in the many years we've been doing this show, I have tried hard to try to find someone that has a story based on the addiction called gambling. And it's been pretty hard to find. I don't know why. But tonight we have one. And, you know, gambling addiction, you know, also known as compulsive gambling, is a type of impulse control disorder. Compulsive gamblers can't control the impulse to gamble even when they know their gambling is hurting themselves or their loved ones. It's something they think about all day. That's all they want to do, no matter what the consequences. And compulsive gamblers, they keep gambling, whether they're up or down, they're broke or flush, happy or depressed. It is a serious addiction.
Well, we see a lot of people, too, that we work with that are chemically dependent primarily, who might get sober and then switch addictions. So I think this is going to be a fabulous show.
Yeah, it's the wiring that says, I have no off switch. And I know that's part of the addict's brain. And, boy, it's a huge problem because the consequences that come with this are just horrific.
Well, we have a lot of friends, too, that are traders, commodities, financial futures, and you can get involved with the adrenaline shot in a lot of different ways. So I'm looking forward to it. But I'm noticing tonight, gosh, Alex looks fabulous.
Well, he does.
I don't know what you've been doing this week, but you look great.
Yeah, there you go. George, let's talk a little bit about some of the myths of gambling before we bring Melinda on, our guest. Do you have to gamble every day to be a problem gambler? What would you think? Yes or no?
No.
Okay. Is gambling a problem if you can afford it?
Could be.
Okay. I think problems caused by, like, excessive gambling, just they're more than financial. I think too much time gambling can lead to, obviously, relationships that completely fall apart. And loss of important friendships. Yeah.
Well, I want to go back to your last question. And, of course, we don't talk during the week, and I don't see these beforehand because we don't talk during the week. But if it's God's money and you're throwing it away gambling, it'd be pretty hard to rationalize that that's what God wants you to do. And I remember a national figure who I respected a lot, still do. In fact, he wrote a book that I read that was great, had an $8 million gambling problem. He worked, I believe, for the government at one time. And, you know, I just thought, gosh, that's kind of not being the best steward in the world. I don't want to judge somebody else, unless it makes me feel better about myself and then I'm all aboard. But you know what I mean.
I get you.
And I think it's kind of like using our talents, too. You know, like maybe I should get a job. But,
maybe you should get some talent.
Well, that's true. Thank you.
Well, George, you know, gamblers will also rationalize their behavior. That's obviously what all addicts do, right?
Yes.
And blaming others, is one way to avoid taking responsibility for their actions. I mean, they can just say, my life is such and such, and it drove me to want to do this.
Well, I think you can.
It's not my fault.
I think you can find a lot of reasons for doing it. I have a lot of friends who have had gambling problems, some that still do. And I'll tell you one thing. I like being around them because they're pretty exciting guys, the ones I know, and they're a good time. And, of course, there's the up and down swing, and we can get addicted. I know I can to the adrenaline, the low-grade depression. You know, it's a merry-go-round, and it's a roller coaster, and we like that kind of action. I wanted to go a little bit, if I can, on step four tonight, Bill.
Great.
Let's
dive into step four.
Well, what step four is, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And normally what people do in 12-step programs is they look at their resentments and their fears. And look at those. And that's great. That's what we do, to look at our moral inventory. But I want to take this back, and when we look at the 12 steps, it's not a linear progression, it's circular. And what I mean by that is this brings us back to step one, Part B, where we admitted we were powerless over drugs, alcohol, gambling, everything, mm-hmm. and that our life was unmanageable. If I have a resentment, and I've had many, and I had one since the show started towards you already.
I get that.
Yeah.
I give you a reason to have one.
Yeah. You go out of your way to do that. And I also have fears, you know, because of inadequacies and, you know, expectations and the like. I've got to be running the universe and not God. And I think that's where our gambling problem, our drinking problem, our sin problem originates, Bill, is back in step one. I really can't have a resentment if God allows everything to happen for His glory, even though we can't see it at the time, that I could do a better job of running it if I have a resentment against somebody. Mm-hmm. And my fear is that I won't get what I want or lose what I have already. That's lack of faith, too. And I think a lot of our issues go back to lack of faith. How about you?
Well, no, it sounds like you've got, like you need a little bit of an edge. Because if you have an edge, you've got a reason to blame others. You've got a reason to be in your addictive cycle. Right, wrong, maybe, I don't know.
Didn't track it.
Yeah, well, don't ask me to repeat it.
It was something about an edge.
Yeah, I mean, you were talking about if you have a resentment and you feel a resentment, it gives you an edge. It gives you something to put your foot on.
Okay.
And that way you can stay angry, you can stay resentful, you can stay in your addictive cycle. Just nod.
Well, I think it gets us out of our acceptance that I don't have to figure everything out. I don't have to know everything to go along with God's plan. And for me, I've really done a lot of work on this lately in that my acceptance level is great when things are going my way.
Mm-hmm.
But when I don't agree with it, wow. You know, the higher my level of expectations, the lower my level of acceptance, I guess.
Yeah. Have you ever had a gambling issue or problem or an episode that you sort of were fearful about?
No, I love to gamble. And no, I did. I used to play a lot of blackjack, and I had a lot of money on the game. I remember my senior year of college, I lost $1,500 that I didn't have in the Super Bowl when the Vikings lost to the Oakland Raiders. But if you've got money on the game, it's mm-hmm. like you're on the team, man. Mm-hmm. You are in this deal.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that adrenaline shot, and I like playing 21. What happened for me is I probably did have a gambling problem, but when I got sober and worked the steps, that went away. I played blackjack once in Vegas about 8 years ago, and the guy I was with was in the program, and he said, "You're scaring me." I mean, it was single-deck blackjack. We're in Bellagio. I go through. I'm hitting on everything. I'm up. I made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it brought back the old feelings, and it was like, haven't done it since. Scared me.
Yeah, boy, you got to stay close to the close to those feelings of out of control, don't you? What it's like. You have to remember what it's like when you all of a sudden have crossed the edge. It's nice you had someone in the program with you to help say, wow, you need to pay attention to what you're doing here.
Well, you know, the other thing is, what are you doing in a casino in the first place?
That was my next question.
I wasn't passing out tracts, you
really?
Know what I mean?
Yeah, you weren't doing one of your missionary trips?
It was a golf trip.
Yeah.
But I'm really interested to hear what our guest says tonight because I'm a trained CD counselor, but a lot of my clients do have gambling issues. And I know here in Minneapolis, Fairview University of Minnesota has a great gambling recovery program that uses the 12 steps. So mm-hmm. this will be enlightening for me, too.
Yeah, I remember, you know, listening to people talk about their experiences with gambling because I played blackjack, I think, a couple times, you know. And it was fun. I think I put a dollar on the table and lost it, and I was done. You know, if you treat it like I'm going to spend 20 or 30 bucks on entertainment and you stop there, then, you know, that's not too harmful. But when I've heard stories of people, then they're absolutely over the top and they've gone 30 hours in a row without sleeping and they're just absolutely flooded with the desire to win and to get back what they lost. And I can see how quickly you can go right down the drain. It's a rabbit hole.
Well, it's pretty exciting when you're winning.
Oh, yeah.
And it is a change of feeling. For me, it was an adrenaline rush. And anything that changes our mood, I think we have to watch.
Yeah.
So it can get carried away. And as you say, hey, if you can do it as you know, a little entertainment, good. But a lot of people can't, and it wrecks a lot of lives.
Yeah. What's the obsession that we have as, you know, a society with all the little side betting and little, I mean, when you play golf, do you say, you know, let's throw a buck in the round and see, you know, who comes in with a low score? Do you do that? I mean, do you roll dice after nine holes to see who's going to buy the Cokes? What do you do?
No, I always, you know, leave my wallet in the car. I play for $2.
Okay.
Front, back, and overall. Yep. But I've got friends that play for thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
For me, it's a marker. It's not the money. I want to beat you, and it's a gentlemanly wager. But
well, why does there have to be a wager at all? Why does there have to be any kind of money at all? Why can't you just go out and enjoy around?
Usually in our games, the money doesn't change hands.
Oh, it doesn't?
No. It's okay. Just, it's a marker. But you're right. And I know some guys who do not want to play unless there's money on the line because they're not interested.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what happens, Bill, is things, you know, sin is fun for a while, and then the consequences. There's a way that seems right to man that ends in death. There's some progression here, and my guess is we'll hear that tonight in the story, that what started out as maybe a hobby or an interest turned into a full-blown disaster.
Yeah. Well, George, how about enough of us? We're going to take a very short break, and when we come back, we're bringing Melinda on. She's on the studio line tonight. You are going to be in for a fascinating hour, Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us tonight. Be back in a minute.
Here's what's ahead on the next Connecting Faith.
Discovering God's plan and purpose for our lives is always a journey. Listen in as General Manager Dick Whitworth talks with Pastor Jeff Peterson about his upside-down journey from a big church to a small church and the lessons he learned along the way. A unique story of discerning God's will on the next Connecting Faith.
Listen for Connecting Faith weekdays at noon on Faith Radio.
Are you struggling to keep up with your fitness plans for the new year? Well, we want to help. Join me, Susie Larson, for Commit to Live Fit 40-Day Challenge. It's a 6-week journey of faith and fitness that lines up with our Lenten journey. During these next few weeks, we'll focus on physical and spiritual disciplines that lead to a healthier life, simple steps that will lead you to a healthier you as you commit to live fit. Every week, you'll receive an email with steps to keep you encouraged along your journey. Sign up for free at our website at myfaithradio.com today.
Kurt, you don't caramelize onions in the toaster. You obviously know nothing about cooking. You caramelize them in the microwave. You know, are we back? Oh, we're back. Okay.
Okay.
Welcome back to Real Recovery, everyone. Glad you joined us tonight. We have got on the studio line Melinda. Melinda has had a very stressful issue called gambling in her life. And boy, she's come full circle and then some. Melinda, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
George, she's still on the line.
Thanks for not hanging up after our first bit. Great.
Do you know how much we sweat through the first bit? Wondering, I wonder if she's going to be on the line when we get there.
No.
Well, I was serious. We have not had a person that's dealt with gambling on the show, and we have tried so hard to find someone. And then when I spoke to you last week, you said, there's millions of us that you could talk to. So I'm glad we have you tonight.
Well, thank you. There are millions of me. And I'll tell you the simple reason why you haven't been able to find anybody. And that's just because it's just still in the shadows. And it has a negative stigma to it that for some reason other addictions do not. And I think perhaps it's looked at more as a moral weakness than other addictions. But believe me, it's just the same in the pathophysiology of it, the high that you talked about, the adrenaline that you talked about, the need to go back that you talked about. And then, of course, it has the same disastrous collateral damage of any addiction and the decimating of lives and families and such. So it's just the same as any addiction. It just is not one that's just, accepted out there. It's getting there. It has a diagnostic code to it and that kind of thing in the medical field, but it's just not really out there yet.
Okay, Melinda, we would love for you to give us start with your journey as best you can and start to give us the progression of what happened and how you got started and how things got kind of out of control.
Sure. I guess I would say that, like a lot of people, the gambling just begins as a social event. You go with your family, with your spouse for birthdays, for anniversaries, things like that, and you decide to go to dinner and then maybe, take $50 in your pocket and spend a couple hours at the casino. And then what happened, at least where I live, is that they saturated my community with venues and with casinos, and there literally ended up being one about 10 minutes from my house. You combine that with the fact that I was going through a pretty serious personal issue in my life, and it really became the perfect storm. And so my social gambling, which by the way, I really loved, and I would look forward to going every time, and I couldn't wait, and I salivated to go, and then it was over. I knew that we wouldn't go for another birthday or another anniversary. But so when they built this casino about 10 minutes from my house, I just started going, and I went by myself, and I went after work, I went before work, and it really became, for me and for many women, they categorize it as an escape form of gambling. And you go and you sit in front of your slot machine and you're in what's called the zone, and not even being cognizant at all of the amount of money that you've put into the machine, because you're really just there to escape. And then that's what happened for me. And it probably 3 years of really bad, secretive, and I was just making a wreck of my finances and my personal life. And, I said, the money is maybe the least of which I lost. I lost time with my children, and, I made some bad choices in regards to work. And then it hit its bottom for me probably about 3 years ago.
How long did it take you? How was the progression here? You start off going maybe a couple times a week, and then...
Well, like I said, I think, I went maybe a couple times a year initially, but then okay. It's when it became available that you're right, probably a couple times a week turned into, no doubt, and you had mentioned it, I heard you guys talking about it before, you think about it every day. When am I going to be able to go? Where am I going to get the money to go? How am I going to be able to go? I would go after work. As I think, I'm a nurse, and I would go after work at midnight and say I'd be home in an hour, and I would watch the sun come up. So it progressed from going a couple times a week and dragging somebody with me so I could say I had somebody with me so it wasn't by myself. That way you kind of tell yourself it's not a problem that you have somebody with you, to then going almost probably pretty much every day by myself.
For our listeners out there, and I'm sure some people do occasionally gamble, what signs do you look for? Is it looking forward to it too much? Obsessing on it when you're not there, wishing you could be? What are some of the signs that maybe this is starting to get to be a problem for you?
Well, both of what you said, that. And I think, anytime it affects any decision that you make that was not a prudent decision, anytime you're taking time away from something that you should be, should be productive. Just like you said, when you start to think about it more than anything else in your life and how you're going to chase those, those losses, because they are inevitably losses. There's not wins. That's not the way slot machines are made. And I think when it becomes, when the anxiety, one of you had spoken earlier about it being an adrenaline rush. Well, when you really get into the thralls of the addiction, even winning does not produce an adrenaline rush. Winning produces anxiety of winning, and that you don't pocket the money. You just go back and you try to get more. So, I think, again, what you said about when you change something in your psyche changes and your behavior changes, anything like that. And these changes can be very subtle and very insidious. And with any addiction, it just takes more and more in order to achieve that same high. So, for me, I can say I didn't see it coming. I look back on it and I go, I never saw it. Maybe I did, but I thought I always could control it like everybody thinks they can with any addiction. And you can't.
Melinda, I'm curious because, in your brain, in my brain, I should say, you try to figure out your finances where you go, okay, my cable bill is going to be $106 or my car payment's going to be $278. So
right.
Whenever you're spending a chunk of money, I'm curious as to what kind of chunk of money was being spent on a weekly basis when you're going there. I mean, obviously you're winning some days and losing others, but what kind of chunk of money was being spent every week?
Well, again, it's, you talked earlier and you also mentioned the fact, and you asked a really good question. If you have money, is it a problem? Yes. Yes and yes. It doesn't matter how much money you have. You're spending time away, and it's becoming an obsession. But I mean, for me, I would drive 2 miles past the store to go to another store to save a couple dollars on ground beef, for example, but think nothing of dropping $500 in an hour in a slot machine. So compare that convoluted thinking that you end up having. So, people drain their 401ks, they drain their bank accounts. This is why this has the highest rate of suicide of any addiction, because you keep thinking, and again, unlike another addiction, you keep thinking you're going to get it back. So I don't know if I can say how much money. I mean, the person that makes $20,000 a year and it's going to put in $5,000, not even thinking that he's going to need that for a car payment, that's done all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have the money, and I made a pretty decent salary.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I didn't have anything left at all.
Yeah, Melinda, it's really a hidden illness, isn't it? Because there's no obvious physical signs or symptoms like there would be
exactly.
with drug or alcohol addiction. You can tell when someone's been on a bender and you go, boy, you look terrible. But if you're gambling, I suppose the worst part is you've lost a night of sleep, so you might look bad. But for the most part, there's no signs or symptoms, is there?
No, there are maybe, but they're not outwardly. You go into a bar and you have eight drinks, they cut you off because you're obviously impaired. You know, I was just as impaired as that person that was, like you said, on the bender.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, there was nobody there to cut me off, me or anybody else. But you're right, it isn't. And I think that's why it's often, first of all, has the stigma. It's caught way too late because people don't seek the help because perhaps their family doesn't even know it's happening because they're coming home looking normal. They don't know that it's happening until they see what has happened to the finances of the family.
You know, one of the worst parts of my addiction, I'm in recovery from cocaine use, was the lies. My whole life became a lie. How did that work itself out for you?
Oh, it still is. I mean, it was a lie to borrow money from people. I need it because my car broke down, or I need it for this or need it for that. Of course, it was a lie. And I lived two completely different people. I was an ICU nurse. And I said that, there are people walking around out there today because of maybe the decisions that I've made or the actions that I took in a split second to save their life, but I couldn't save my own. For the life of me, I couldn't save my own. And so it did become a lie. What are you doing tonight, Melinda? I'm going home, but I didn't. I went to the casino. I did CPR on a woman one time in the casino who went out, passed out next to me. And revived her. And you would have thought that would have been a great story to tell people, but I didn't tell anybody because I was so ashamed that it happened at the casino.
Mm.
Well, we get a double life going, don't we? And those two lives can never meet. They can never meet. That's interesting to me. You have an adrenaline job, or you did too. That's interesting.
It is, and I know. Believe me, I thought a lot about that, and for some reason, there is a tremendous, and I don't know why, I do go to GA, and, obviously now I go out and I speak about this, and there is a preponderance of healthcare workers that seem to have this affliction. Now, I know that healthcare workers also have painkiller addiction, and things like that. And I don't know, I haven't quite figured that out, whether it's because, I was just rushing all the time at work, saving lives, doing this. Give me some time to myself now and give me the adrenaline back. Who knows? I haven't really thought too much about it, but I'm sure there's a causal relationship there.
It's very interesting, Bill, for me to listen to this because we find different vehicles to work out our addiction, whether it's alcohol, gambling, food, work, whatever, and they're all got substitutes.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is we need to do more and more of them, and we get less and less of an effect. That's
mm-hmm.
the tolerance. And then when you stop doing it, it's withdrawal. And that's sin, really, in that I need to do more and more and more of it to get the same effect. And when I'm not mm-hmm. doing it, there's withdrawal. And I'm wondering how this all came crashing down for you, the moment of mental clarity that we talk about. How did you get there?
Honestly, I made some very poor choices in actions that I took in order to get the money to gamble. And I got into legal trouble. And I lost a job of 27 years.
Ouch.
Mm.
And I had a lot of respect there. I was a nursing supervisor. And, you talked about the lies. I mean, people had no idea that I was caught up in this. I mean, again, it goes back to the stigma. Who was I going to tell? Because you hear, why don't you just stop? Okay. Gee, I never thought of that.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up.
You lost, you tell somebody you lost $30,000, you know, on alcohol or drugs, you may get a reaction of, I'm so sorry, I hope you get some help. You tell somebody you lost $30,000 on a slot machine in 6 months, that reaction is going to be, what are you, an idiot? That's exactly what's out there. So you don't talk about it and you don't tell people. So my crash came down when I got fired from my job, and I had to pull myself up out of the ashes and say, I can't believe this happened to me, but it did. And enough is enough. And how can I keep this from happening to other people? Of course, first I had to, you know, just repair and heal myself more than anybody else. And I think I went from self-centered to Christ-centered in order to have that recovery, healing, and transforming my life. And it worked. It worked. You know, thank goodness. By the grace of God, I'm here to talk to you today. Honest to God.
Yeah, and it is absolutely fascinating. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to have a couple of segments coming up with Melinda. So stay tuned. We're going to have a great show coming up. You listen to Real Recovery, Bill George, and the person impersonating Alex. Actually, it's Aaron tonight. We'll be back in just a minute.
Okay. Pop it.
Helping you grow deeper in your faith.
God is moving all over the world, including in the Amazon. This is Susie Larson, and on the next of The Promise, I'll talk with author Kelly Minter. She shares how a trip to South America increased her love for the gospel. Then singer Alicia Williamson-Garcia will share her faith in music. We'll also kick off our Commit to Live Fit journey.
Live The Promise with Susie Larson, weekdays 3 p.m. on Faith Radio.
There are certain things you expect to see on Facebook. Adorable pictures of your friend's new nephew, links to petitions, news stories, and lists for the top five, everything, and lots of videos about cats. But now, something unexpected on your Facebook feed. Encouragement, a call to living out your faith each day, and the wisdom to help you do it. It's My Faith Radio on Facebook. For refreshing perspective and truth to hold on to, just look for My Faith Radio on Facebook.com.
Hi, I'm Arnie Cole, CEO of Back to the Bible and Go Tandem. It's 10:30 and Mike's wife and kids are in bed. Mike tells his wife he'll be there shortly. He just needs to do a little computer work. He goes to the home office, locks the door, and logs onto his favorite porn site. Sound familiar? That's why we created Go Tandem, to reach those dark places people don't talk about. GoTandem sends Bible messages to your laptop or smartphone. Messages that speak directly to the issues that trip us up spiritually, and you schedule them to arrive when you need them the very most. In Mike's case, one of those times is 10:30 at night. We all need spiritual guidance throughout the day, each and every day.
Download our free GoTandem app, or if you don't have a smartphone, sign up for the online version at GoTandem.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Real Recovery. It's 5:32 on a chilly, chilly winter evening. George, it's nice to be here in a warm studio, isn't it?
Who is that?
Stevie Wonder.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice to be in a warm studio, isn't it, George?
It is, Bill.
Yeah, I worked at a pest control company for an hour when I discovered I was afraid of mice, bugs, and spiders. So that job was not for me.
But today?
No, it wasn't today. It was years and years and years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
George, that $278 you for your car payment? You're kind of getting ripped off, man. I hate to. Somebody should have told you that.
Well, you think I should be more or less?
Oh, I've seen your car.
It should be less?
Yeah.
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 Well, I put a lot down. That's why it's only $278.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We're talking to Melinda Litchfield. She's a woman that has had a very interesting story and an addiction to gambling, and she is doing something about it. She has gotten her life sorted out in a miraculous way through Christ, and is also getting many opportunities to get out and share her story with others, and that's an encouragement to all.
I just got your joke. If you put down that much money, your payments should be lower.
Yeah.
That was good. Yeah.
Thanks, George.
You know, this is interesting for me because it mimics a lot of the other stories that we've had on, Bill. It's just more maybe a socially acceptable and doesn't, you know, show the bruises as much.
Well, you can really go under the radar for quite a while on this one.
Well, yeah, and she's obviously very successful at what she does. And,
yeah,
you know, she can hide this, but she knows she likes it too much. There's some preoccupation. And then the loss all of a sudden. 20-year job. A great job.
A great job. You supervisor, know, ICU nurse.
Yeah, and you know what?
Major professional.
Yeah, you had to go through a lot to get the job. You had to do a lot to keep the job and get promoted and promoted and promoted. And it's got to be a big part of your identity. And then all of a sudden, bam, gone. Fair?
Completely my identity. Completely. Absolutely. It was, in a course of a weekend, it happened on a Friday, and in the course of a weekend, I didn't think I would see Monday. There's no way. I didn't see any other way out.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. And, you know, there were times when I was, once you know that you have a problem, once you do admit that you have a problem, it doesn't mean you stop, obviously, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just
yep.
Admitting it doesn't get you to stop.
Well, you got plan B and, then. You know, you got to.
Yeah, plan B.
What was your plan B?
Well, I mean, what I was going to say was that I would try to, and this is kind of the mantra of nurses too. And so we heal ourselves. You know, we don't go to doctors until we're really sick. We don't, you know, we don't take drugs really. We don't take antibiotics. We don't do that unless we're really sick. I mean, or we get it on the job. It's just kind of what nurses do. We're the last to take care of ourselves. And I think this extended to my gambling. And even when I knew I had a problem, and of course, in any addiction, you say, okay, no more as of tomorrow, stopping, right? And you don't stop because then you think, well, I can do this and I can have it under control, but you don't ever have it under control. And, anyway, I would go to bookstores and I would look online to see if I could find somebody, especially a woman, you know, that had a gambling issue. And can I talk to them? Can I just find out, how did you kick it? How did you beat it? What do I do? And there's just nothing, there's very, very little out there. And so my life's work now is just to be that voice and that face to this, because there are millions of us. I mean, in Illinois alone, there is a self-exclusion list. And I are you familiar with what that is?
No.
Yeah. Is that where you get on a casino's list of people that mm-hmm. can't come in or something?
You really, it's a lifetime ban, and you pose it on yourself, and
okay.
You sign up, and you can never be at a casino again for the fear of being arrested for trespassing.
Oh,
okay?
Wow.
So my point in this is going to be is to tell you that there are, right now in Illinois, nearly 12,000 people on that self-exclusion list. And of those 12,000 people, that is estimated to be only 10 to 15% of real compulsive and addictive gamblers. So think of the numbers.
Do you put yourself on that list? Can you voluntarily go on that?
That's the only way you can go on there.
Okay. Wow.
And I did do that.
So you're at risk of trespassing. You can be kicked out if you get caught in a casino and you put yourself on that list. Is that how that works?
It is, and there's like a bounty on you. Like they, I don't know when. For example, I don't know when the last time you walked into a casino, but if you notice, there's a computer to the left of where you walk in, and they're constantly looking at the pictures of the people.
Oh.
And if you're caught in there, the person that catches you, at least in Illinois, I think they get like $300 or $500 or something like that. And if you have any winnings, you have to forfeit those winnings.
How many?
Now,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the problem with that list now in Illinois is that there's so many other venues, you know, and laundromats and gas stations and bars and restaurants that have video gaming now, and the self-exclusion list doesn't apply to those. So it's really setting up a lot of people like me and people that I know that have been sober. We use the same terminology that alcoholism does, that have been sober for 10, 15 years. They are failing now. They have found that. I just talked to a gentleman the other day who walked in to pay for his gas. He had not gambled for 10 years. He was an active member of GA. He was in recovery. And he walked in to pay for his gas. And he saw video gambling there. He thought, I can do this again. He lost his home.
Oh, my.
Well, I was thinking about, you know, you turn yourself in. You can get a fake ID because that's a lot like pouring your booze out. I'm never going to drink again. And I'm sure it seems like a good idea at the time, but maybe a week later, things are different.
Exactly. There's ways around it. And just now, of course, you know, these other venues that they can go into. There's ways around it. But it's not the ID. They take your picture. It's not the ID. When you go put yourself on the self-exclusion list, they take your photo. So you don't have to show an ID at a casino. They're just always looking at your picture to see if they recognize you.
Now, we could get around that. But yeah,
you could.
So the problem is one day at a time. And you had talked about how Christ, you know, saved you and got you away mm-hmm. from this. Can you walk us through how that process was?
I would shamefully admit that I have always thought Jesus as my Savior. However, I don't know whether I was totally invested, if you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean.
Okay. And I think I shared with you that 2 weeks ago I worked a soup kitchen near my house. I would have never done that 5 years ago. So what has happened to me has made me a better person, and I did it with my church. I had put on the dashboard of my car when I was going through recovery, I put from Peter 5-8. I don't know if you're familiar with that, where it says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil,
roars around.
Is a roaring. Yep.
Yeah, you can finish that because it's a great verse.
Well, it is because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about, seeking whom he may devour. And I put that on there because, of course, in my car was often, that was the motive for me to go to gamble, right? It was in my car. I had to drive there. I couldn't do it from home. You can't, which people can drink at home. They can, you know, do their drugs at home. But I had to get in my car to drive somewhere to do my drug of choice. So I thought the best place for this would be my car. Not that I blamed my car, but it was always there for me to look at it. And, you know, very much so, like I said, at Christ, I was probably a self-centered, you know, I turned from self-centered to Christ-centered. And Christ was central in my recovery and healing and transforming my life and allowing God to restore my relationship with him and to bring me healing and wholeness. And I would, you know, they talk about the higher power being the term. There is no doubt in my mind that God and Jesus not only... I don't want to start crying on Mr.
That's okay. You can cry away. It's very sweet,
not
Melinda.
Only carried me, you know, across that river of, you know, there's so much to shame and despair and financial ruin, you know, but now still holds on to me. I work through him, I think, and hoping that I just can reach a few people so that they don't go through with what I went through. And I am a strong woman. I'm a strong person. I think, again, you know, nurses are. And so I'm hoping I'm the mechanism, I'm the venue to do this, because it is destroying and decimating lives in record numbers, this addiction is. And the fact that you couldn't find somebody to talk to tells you right there and how horrible it is, the stigma of it. And then, therefore, there's very little recovery. The recovery is too late.
You know, there's a couple of great things here, and I sure appreciate your honesty, that we, I know for me, when I was using, I was a Christian, and Jesus was my Savior. He just wasn't Lord of my life. And what we always see in recovery, whether it's from drugs, alcohol, whatever, and gambling, that he doesn't save us from our addiction without having a job for us to do. And it's very encouraging and powerful for me to hear God's victory in your life, in that you're sharing that he had a job for you that he knew about before you were born, that he knew that you were going to be telling people about his saving grace in the gambling community. And that's awesome for me. No, I just think not only, you know, we talked about how selfish we are when we're using, and one of the signs that we see with people in recovery walking with the Lord is you've got something, and the way you keep it is by giving it away. And when you work with other people, is that, and I hate to use this term, but it's the only one I have right now, a better high for you than using when you see somebody else receive God and change their life from gambling? Is that better than the gambling high for you?
Yes, but in a different way. Yes. I mean, I guess I never really thought of it, honestly. I mean, I can honestly say that my worst day now is still better than my best day gambling. And I never thought I could even live without it. But I see people now, and they talk about that it's good for you every once in a while to see people come in just devastated like I was. I mean, I was so broken, just so broken in every way. And so to see people like that and to know that, yeah, I remember when I was there, and there's still times when I'm still upset that it even happened to me to begin with. But I keep in there, like what you just said, I believe what you just said now. This has been in motion for years and years and years to come. And I used to get mad that why did my bottom happen worse than other people? Some people just woke up one day and said they didn't want to gamble anymore, and they stopped. That didn't happen to me. And I don't, if it would have happened to me, maybe I would not go out and be doing the work I'm doing. So when I talk to people on the phone who call me and they're desperate like I was, it's a high in the fact that my purpose is so framed now in front of me. And to have a purpose every day like this, it's so empowering. It's amazing. It's like I was handpicked, plucked to do this.
You were. You were chosen to do it. Those people that, you know, say a prayer and quit using or whatever their behavior problem, they're the same people that didn't chew gum in class. And I don't want to hang around those people, but I know there are miraculous healings. But I think for most of us, it's a process. And that's why we need to be out there with the victory so they can see it, you know, and what you do and what your story is. Hey, this is what God did for me. Our story is not our story. It's God's story of victory in us that we're privileged to be able to share. And it sounds like you're doing that. What I meant about, you know, the high or whatever, this is what we're supposed to do. And if we're not doing it, nothing is going to be as good as that. And when you do it, nothing is better than that. I guess that's a better way to phrase it.
Sure.
George, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to have one more segment with Melinda. So hang in there with us tonight on Real Recovery. We'll be back in just a minute.
The gift of a goat may not change the entire world, but what if it could change the world for one family? Samaritan's Purse provides animals and agricultural tools to families and farmers in developing countries around the world, giving them a fresh start and a sustainable livelihood. It's a new beginning and a new life. Samaritan's Purse. We're helping in Jesus' name. To get involved, log on to samaritanspurse.org.
There are so many ways we want to help, so many needs we wish we could reach out and meet. But the number of challenges in our neighborhoods and communities can overwhelm us. Yet there is something we can do, and it's powerful. Friends and neighbors across the Upper Midwest are banding together to pray. Here's a warm invitation to join us in the Faith Radio Prayer Team. You'll stay updated with what's on the hearts of your neighbors across the region as together we do the most important thing we can. You can get started when you find the Faith Radio Prayer Team at myfaithradio.com.
Welcome back to Real Recovery. Ouch, George.
Live
learn
recording.
Learn how to use the controls, would you? Come to the half-day seminar.
My guitar has some feedback on the amp.
Welcome back to the show. We're talking tonight to Melinda. Melinda's had a gambling problem, and she's just on fire now to share the joy that she has with others about a different kind of life. And, George, you had a question for her as to how she's going about doing that.
I'm real interested to hear, now that you've been delivered from your gambling addiction, and you obviously you're still working a recovery program on that, but how are you sharing and how are you being for an advocate for the person who's still suffering?
Well, it's actually the first kind of role out there. I work for an organization now that did a lot for me when I was first searching for some advocacy and for some help. And I am their national victims advocate. And I speak whenever, talk to whenever, listen to whomever I can. There's certain policy change and, you know, there's a political component to it. But primarily it's to advocate for the victim and to, it sounds so basic, but to tell them they're not alone and there's help out there and your life will be so much better if you're not gambling, and you shouldn't think that you should have to hide in the shadows and that you were, you know, devil's child and you were so morally weak than someone else, you're not. And you know, God loves you just like everyone else, and that there's help out there. So I do a lot of different, I have my hands into a lot of different sort of pieces of advocacy, be it, like I said, there's some political pieces to it. There's, I do as much, like with you, kind of some, as much press as I can do, just talk to people every day on the phone that call me and see where we can go with this, just to stop it in its tracks if we can.
Is there a website people can go to for Gamblers Anonymous, or there's some literature they can get?
Well, of course, there's a Gamblers Anonymous website that they can go to. And then, you know, there's all kinds of kind of stop gambling blogs out there. Is it okay for me to go ahead and tell you my organization?
Absolutely.
Okay. It's called StopPredatoryGambling.org. And it is called that because that's what it is predatory gambling. And especially right now, and we just talk about this, it's a real problem with our older Americans right now. And, you know, we're trying to do a lot of work. I go into nursing homes. I talk to Rotary clubs. I talk to women's clubs. I get calls from people in their 60s that say that their mom has just lost their entire Social Security for gambling because they didn't know what else. She didn't know what else to do. She couldn't occupy her time. So she gets the free bus ride to the free buffet, to the free ergonomic wheelchair, to then go gamble away all her Social Security money. So it's a big problem among older Americans, too. Our website is StopPredatoryGambling.org. We are a 501(c) organization based out of Washington, D.C., and I am the National Victims Advocate for that organization. I would love it if anybody would go visit it. They can email me on that site, and you can see what we're all about.
I wasn't aware that was a problem with seniors, Bill. Were you?
George, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Huge.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah, the buses come and they take them to the casinos, and I have a friend whose dad played slots every night. Now, he had some money to lose, and I think he did lose it all, but it gave him something to do.
Wow.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there's practices that people are just unaware of. I just talked to a gentleman the other day. I'll just throw out this story real quick that the casino gave him $60,000 worth of credit, not seeing if he could pay it back, of course. And the man is 82 years old. So there's a lien on his house right now.
Mm. Well, Linda, I'm just kind of curious, and we've got another 10 minutes or so, but I'm obviously fascinated by the severity of the cases. I mean, and you've been around it now for a while. Can you tell us what, like, the worst case was you heard of somebody and what they lost?
Their life.
Okay. I mean, of course, that'd be number one, wouldn't it? They commit suicide,
yeah,
don't they?
They do. There's a woman who works with our organization who, there's a beginning of litigation. We talk about this fact that this may go the way of big tobacco and litigation and warnings and things like that. I think that's years down the road. But her husband was a CFO for a company. I mean, if you every day embezzled millions of dollars, father of three children, and went to a park bench in a soccer field and killed himself. Mm-hmm. And it was all because of gambling. So, you know, the worst stories are the ones with people in their lives. Or on the other end of the spectrum, maybe the worst story, that's a bad story. Nothing is worse than that, are the people that can't stop. Still can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so every day they live with that anguish of they can't stop this habit. Yeah. And what it does to the children, and I mean, life altering effects to families and children. And, you know, I can't even begin to tell you, but I guess I would say those are the two worst stories.
Yeah.
Loss of life or the people that can't stop.
So the only way to really change the narrative is to have God's story replace your story.
Yes.
I mean, to me, that's just the classic solution to every addiction and every sin, is to have Christ come in and break that yoke of slavery.
And that is great, but how do I do it? What would be my first step?
How do you walk it out?
Yes. Melinda, mm-hmm. What would you recommend?
Not to put you on the spot.
I'm not asking Bill. I wanted to get some help here.
Obviously not. He's not going to ask
me. And
I
don't know myself. If I'm out here listening and I'm listening to this, I'm going, you know, she's talking about me. What do I do?
Well, I think, I guess, you know, the simple answer to the first thing is obviously not to engage in whatever practices it is and to just get some help and to give your life over to God.
Uh-huh.
To give your life over to God, and if you do the right things, the ship will right. It'll right the ship, and sometimes not in the same time frame that you want it to happen. And it's also the highest rate of relapse, by the way, of any addiction, because it's not framed in the same way. But giving yourself totally up to Jesus Christ as your Savior, and that He will, in His way, He will make it right within you. And I hear that from people every day too, who perhaps didn't even believe in God before, that know now they can't do it within themselves. They have to have a higher power to do it for them. And so now they've gone that way, which is really nice to hear too.
Okay, George, let me take a shot at it here. All right. It would be, God, I need you. God, I'm in trouble. God, I hope you're there, and I'd like to have a relationship with you.
Mm-hmm.
Start the conversation. How about that, George?
Okay, and that's where we want to start. What do I do next? Do I go to a Gamblers Anonymous meeting? What would you suggest I do? Because I'm with Bill. I want to go to God. I want to get forgiveness. I want to get guidance, and I want to get the power, strength, and desire to act on this. But what is my action after connecting with God?
I really can say it. I don't think that you can heal. I don't think that you can have abstinence unless you do get into a fellowship such as Gamblers Anonymous, you know, the 12-step program.
So get yourself to a meeting. Get yourself in community.
I
went to 30 meetings in 30 days. So that's what you have to do.
I think that's kind of like what we worked with recovery people, Bill and I do all the time, and I'm in recovery too, and my heart can be right, and I want to go to God first, but I need to get into action. In Philippians 2:12 says, I work out my salvation with fear and trembling, and we need action. Every day I hit the knees and pray for the power, strength, and desire to stay sober. But are we in the Word? Are we going to meetings? And being around other people and realizing you're not terminally unique, that other people are just like you are, and they're having success by working a program, that's priceless, isn't it?
It is, and I think there's an important thing to know is that, and maybe you two will not agree with this, but there's a difference between abstinence and recovery. You can abstain from whatever it is you do, but you have to be in a constant mode of recovery, and that is with the Lord and with the fellowship, because otherwise you're not going to stay with abstinence. That's my belief anyway.
Oh, amen. Well, the other thing is I can stop a behavior, but if I don't develop a relationship with the creator of a universe, I'm not in recovery.
Exactly.
I agree with you 100%.
Exactly.
Thank you for saying that.
Mm-hmm.
We had one of our former guests say that when you take a backyard garden and in the spring you clear out all the weeds and rototill the land, and that's sobriety. There's nothing in the garden. So you got to start planting things that you can grow and nurture and cultivate and have a life of recovery, not just be mm-hmm. in a state of sobriety.
Absolutely.
Right. There's abstinence, and then there's recovery. We believe that all addictions are idolatry, and recovery without Jesus Christ is still idolatry. I want to get forgiveness of my sins, and I want to have eternal life, and I want to have the life that God created me for, and it mm-hmm. sounds like you've got that, and I'm so happy to hear that for you.
Thank you. I am too. If you would have told me, you know, 3 years ago, I would be talking to you about this today, I would have said, no, that's not where my life's going.
Do you miss nursing?
I did it for a long time. Mm-hmm. I do. I miss the hands-on, you know, part of it. I miss the relationships, of course, my friends. But I have to tell you, you know, like I said, I worked there 27 years, so I still have people that are in my life that I worked with there. I do, but I think it ran its toll. I think I was probably, you know, I would have stayed in it. I was really involved, interestingly enough, I was really involved in our Gift of Hope program, which I don't know if they have the same title for that, where you are, and it's the organ donation program. And my analogy now with that is that I won an award there for the Life Saving Partners Award, and I really worked hard on that. And of course, the core of that being that something positive comes out of something so horrific.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So people live because of that. So I say I'm kind of still working that program in a different way.
Yeah.
In that, you know, you can't say somebody definitely died when people have died, but I mean, something positive now, it's something coming out of something that was so devastating in my life.
Well, Melinda, thank you so much. I know if listeners have friends out there that have struggled with gambling, definitely go to realrecovery.com, go to the Real Recovery show page, and you can send this podcast on to a friend or to a relative, somebody that you know might be struggling. Melinda, you've just been a delight. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
And Aaron, thanks for being on the board. George, thanks for everything. And I hope everyone has a great week. Good night, everyone, and God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you.